Unlock your Bible. Discover the true meaning of life. Learn the cause of world problems and the astounding solution. Prove for yourself what the future holds. In the Trumpet Literature Library, you will find answers to life's most important questions. Explore these vital titles on Trumpet Bookshelf.
Hello, everyone. My name is Grant Turgeon, and you're listening to Trumpet Bookshelf. This is a new series on KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. I just wanted to let you know a little bit about myself before we get into today's topic. I've been in the Philadelphia Church of God my whole life, and I've lived in Oklahoma for almost my whole life as well, including being born here. When I was a young person, I was working in landscaping and on mail packing on the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus, which is affiliated with the PCG. And I also had the privilege of attending 6 Philadelphia youth camps, 3 years of high school at Imperial Academy, which is also a part of the PCG. And then I got to graduate from 4 years of Herbert W. Armstrong College. Now I am an assistant to PCG Pastor General Gerald Fleury. I teach a 3rd and 4th grade Bible class at Imperial Academy, and I write for a variety of PCG publications. Until recently, I was on Trumpet Radio Live for over 2 years with KPCG station manager Dwight Falk, who is now the new host of the KPCG radio program Live by Every Word. Before we move on, you all must know something very important. My wife's name is Anya, and my daughter's name is Loma. Loma turns a year old later this month, and my family brings me great joy. Now, we're going to introduce the producer of this show, Gino Chi. He's going to be coming out from behind the scenes just for a moment here as I describe him. Gino Chi came here from Oklahoma, from the Philippines to Oklahoma 4 years ago. He gave the student address at the Armstrong College commencement last month, and that same day won a monetary award for high achievements in leadership and service. His senior year at the college, he was the student body president, and he had a really short stint on an archaeological excavation in Jerusalem under Dr. Alat Mazar. Should I tell them why? No, just kidding. He's very experienced with camera work and video and audio editing, and after graduating last month, he was hired into the PCG Broadcasting Department. So that's me, Grant Turgeon. That's our producer, Gino Chi. And now I'll just tell you a little bit about this program, Trumpet Bookshelf. The goal of this program is to offer compact summaries of PCG booklets and books. Each booklet will probably take just one episode, while the larger books may be divided up into several episodes. This program is not meant as a substitute for personal Bible study, but as a teaser to get you interested in studying this literature again or for the first time. There are 104 literature items at the literature tab at thetrumpet.com. My wife counted those up for me yesterday. The late educator, philanthropist, and theologian Herbert W. Armstrong often talked about proving God's truth one doctrine at a time. Similarly, on this program, we will go through one chapter, booklet, or book at a time until we have done all 104 of those items. Today, we are going to start with Does God Exist? This is a booklet from Mr. Armstrong. And really, it's a masterclass in logic. In just 13 pages, Mr. Armstrong thoroughly disproves evolution and also proves the existence of God. He uses accurate analogies and a lot of basic logical maneuvers to make a topic spiritual in nature easy for all of us to understand. He employs a mountain of scientific research and the fundamental laws of science itself to tear down the core belief of the vast majority of scientists. This booklet is 13 pages of proof that science and true religion coexist perfectly. They are not at war with one another, as many seem to think today. So let's get right into the booklet. On page 1 of Does God Exist, Mr. Armstrong writes, "Let's face this question. Is it rational to believe in God? Is God merely a myth, an invention of an ignorant, superstitious past? Many today assume this." And then under the subheading, "I question God's existence," it says, "With me, and I hope with the reader, I wanted to know. I wanted to be sure. I questioned the existence of God. Also, I questioned the opposing doctrine of evolution. I did not seek to disprove either, but I did research and carefully examine the evidences on both sides of this two-sided question. For this question is the very starting place for the acquisition of all knowledge. It is the foundation for understanding. So, as Mr. Armstrong brings out in this booklet, there are two theories of origin, or two theories that attempt to explain this life, life on the planet, and the physical creation of the entire universe. It had to have come into existence in some way or another. Now, this is a pivotal question. Either there is a creator who is in charge of mankind, or humans act as God unto themselves. Either God sets what is right and wrong in our lives, or we do. And you can see how important this question is just by looking at society today. There is controversy over a lot of issues that until a few years ago actually used to be common sense. Common sense, which is actually provided by God. There is no common sense anymore when you dig enough into human reasoning and you start relying on yourself to answer what is right and what is wrong. That is why society today is on the verge of collapse. On page 2 of the Does God Exist booklet, Mr. Armstrong writes about the careless acceptance of beliefs in all of our lives. Nearly every person on the planet believes what he believes because the people around him believe the same thing. We are a product of our environment. If we grow up around Muslims, it's very likely that we will become Muslims ourselves. If we grow up in a household that is predominantly evangelical, it's very likely that we'll grow up to be the same. The same thing goes for atheism. And people carelessly accept beliefs of all kinds simply based on if it is acceptable in the environment where they grew up. Mr. Armstrong, on this second page of the booklet, also discusses the intimidation campaign in favor of evolution. So basically, there's a lot of ignorance out there, a lot of people who do not prove their beliefs, and combined with that is a campaign for people to believe in evolution. The assumption is that if you believe in evolution, you are more educated than those who believe in God. That's quite an intimidation campaign. And it has been proven as well that the very few scientists who do believe in God pretty much have to keep that belief quiet in their practices. Otherwise, they'll be defunded or they'll be removed from their positions at universities. So there obviously is a lot of pressure for people to believe in evolution, but when it comes to finding out the truth, those types of pressures do not matter. You have to find out what the truth is regardless of what people expect you to think or what you've been taught from birth. Mr. Armstrong had an open mind, and he was one of the strongest advocates for deep thinking and studying. Some have actually accused him, though, of having an anti-education bias. This was a man who ran two successful nationwide advertising agencies based on his own personal study into that field. He did not go to college to get this education. He had the work ethic and the discipline and the focus to study into advertising for himself. And he also had a good mentor in his family to lead him in that direction. In 1926, his wife challenged him to prove that true Christians should keep the Sabbath day. At the same time, another relative ridiculed him for not believing in evolution. He studied night and day for 6 months to prove whether the Sabbath should be kept and whether evolution is true. As Mr. Armstrong said, he did not study to disprove anything. He went into these types of studies with an open mind. He removed his preconceived notions on the topic, and he sought for the truth. So here he is on page 2 of the booklet, already explaining how people can so easily accept certain beliefs without proving them. Where is the anti-education bias? How can this man, of all people, be accused of brainwashing others? Throughout his entire ministry, he told people never to look to a man, to instead prove the truth for themselves. However, Mr. Armstrong was very critical of the deadly leaven of higher education, as he called it. That criticism is based on the two theories of origin mentioned above. Mr. Armstrong knew that nearly all intellectuals have chosen evolution over God, and founded on the wrong premise, those who believe in evolution are already walking down the wrong path. That is the type of education that Mr. Armstrong was critical of, education founded on the wrong premise. On page 2 of the booklet, he says, "Evolutionists accept the theory because of their reluctance or unwillingness to believe in God." That's a really condemning statement, but he proves it thoroughly to the end of this booklet. Mr. Armstrong also knew about the Bible's fierce condemnation of the human mind apart from God. Romans 8 verse 7 states, "Because the carnal mind is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can be." Did you know that? Did you know that naturally your mind is at war with God? Did you know that you can't actually discern the truth with your human mind alone? It is crucial to understand this natural bias that all human beings have against the truth of God. Mr. Armstrong was forced to study the Sabbath question honestly. His marriage was at stake, as he wrote in Mystery of the Ages and as he wrote in his autobiography. Otherwise, maybe he would have had a closed mind going into this study. Naturally, a lot of us would. Mr. Armstrong was very successful at this time. He was making multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, if not up to maybe $1 million a year by today's standards. He was in association with a lot of successful businessmen, and it would have cut him off from a lot of those contacts and a lot of those friends if he had decided all of a sudden to start keeping the Sabbath. So, humanly, the pull was toward rejecting the Sabbath, trying to disprove it. But still, he had to look at it honestly because his wife was challenging him, and he didn't want his marriage to fall apart. Mr. Armstrong learned how extremely unpleasant it is to have to unlearn his prior beliefs and to study a controversial subject with complete objectivity. It requires humility and an unquenchable thirst for the truth. Suffice it to say, looking at Mr. Armstrong's life and work, that Mr. Armstrong did prove the existence of the spirit world. He proved the presence of a God. But an atheist challenged him, and probably many of them did, but here's what one of them wrote on page 3, or what one of them said to him, as Mr. Armstrong records on page 3. "We have the history of many religions and many gods. Which one of these gods do you claim for your God? And how do you know that he exists?" So that's a tough question. But Mr. Armstrong always embraced the opportunity to give an answer for his beliefs. It's very different from what you see today, where reporters are trying to interview protesters on the street. There are angry protesters who have loads of emotion, but are unable to answer a simple question. Their emotion isn't founded on logic and truth. In discussing any subject, if the logic isn't airtight and based on truth, chaos reigns. Once the logic is set, proper expression of emotion is then appropriate. Here on page 3 of this booklet, the Logic Masterclass commences. Mr. Armstrong explains how most so-called gods have actually been created by men. Some of these gods are formed from human imagination or faulty human reasoning. Some of these gods are inanimate objects of nature, such as the sun. Some of these gods are composed of stone, wood, or metal. If man created the god in question, then it is inferior to man and can't be on the god level. If the god in question is an inanimate object like the sun, then where did it come from? So just worshiping whatever we conceive in our minds, or whatever we build with our hands, or whatever we see in nature, clearly is not enough. On page 3 of this booklet, Mr. Armstrong wrote, "But he who did the creating, he who brought everything that exists into existence, including all else falsely called God, he who created all matter, force, and energy, who created all natural laws and set them in motion, who created life and endowed some of it with intelligence, he is God. He is superior to all else that is called God. He alone is God. Creation is the proof of God. It's not God. You don't build God with your hands. You don't look off into the distance and see the sun and worship that. Creation is just the proof, the physical evidence right in front of our eyes that God does exist. Mr. Armstrong points out on page 4 the impossibility of using the evolutionary hypothesis to account for the existence of the universe. What is the origin of life? Going back to a time before the universe existed, what caused life to spring forth? Scientists, the most brilliant minds in the entire world, have whittled it down to the tiniest particle of matter from which the entire universe supposedly somehow exploded into being. But where did that minuscule particle come from? The scientific law of biogenesis states that life must come from life. Someone had to have created that first particle at the very least. Only an eternally existing spirit being could have done so. As Mr. Armstrong also points out in the booklet, there has been no past eternity of matter. Elements are in a constant process of disintegration. Radioactive elements have not been in existence long enough to have run their course and disintegrated into lead. We hear about radioactivity in the news sometimes, and we know that that is the effect that nuclear weapons have. But if they had all run their course and turned into lead by now, you wouldn't even have anything radioactive out there. So that just is proof right there that there is a specific time limit on the existence of the universe. It couldn't have existed forever, or else all radioactive elements right now would be lead. There was indeed a time when nothing in the universe existed. No planets, asteroids, stars, atmosphere, galaxies, nothing. On page 5 of the booklet, Mr. Armstrong wrote, "Evolution usually postulates that things come about gradually, through the slow-moving natural processes of the present. Try to imagine, if you can, something coming into existence out of nothing, gradually. Can your mind entertain the idea? I think not. No, I think if you are rational, you will have to accept the fact of a special and necessarily instantaneous creation, and some power or someone had of necessity to do the creating. There is a cause for every effect. God is that first cause that Mr. Armstrong was talking about."
You've been listening to Trumpet Bookshelf. Please email your thoughts to comments at kpcg.fm. Listen for new episodes every Friday at 10 a.m. Central Time.
You're listening to the very first episode of Trumpet Bookshelf. I'm your host, Grant Turgeon. In this series, we are covering the books and booklets in the literature tab of thetrumpet.com, one by one. Today, the subject of discussion is the late theologian Herbert W. Armstrong's booklet, Does God Exist? So far, we have proven through science that the universe must have been created, even though scientists themselves will reject that proof. By the way, we have also proven indirectly that the Earth is much older than 6,000 years, contrary to the belief of fundamentalist Christians. The elements on Earth and in the universe, which we just discussed, have been around far longer than 6,000 years. That is scientifically provable. Like I said earlier, true science and true religion aren't at war with one another. True science and false religion are. The next question, after proving the existence of a creator, is the creator a being of intelligence or just a dumb force? Here, Mr. Armstrong presents another logical masterpiece. On page 7 of the Does God Exist booklet, he asks, "Do you know of anything that is superior to your mind?" Humans are capable of far more than the animals. We can think, reason, make difficult decisions, design, create, build, invent, and even manipulate the forces of nature in our favor. That is far more than what the dumb animals can do. We take the existing materials of the earth and use them to do the impossible. Yet, no matter how impressive the skyscraper or rocket ship, No matter how profound the art or literature, nothing we produce is superior to our intelligence, which accomplished these magnificent feats. Now, after describing these capabilities of mankind, he sets up for the strikeout question on page 8. Now, let me ask you candidly, do you honestly believe that any power or force of less intelligence than your mind produced you? That's a great question, because the logic here is extremely consistent. Nothing we create on this earth could possibly be considered greater than us. So if we are a creation, could our creator possibly be inferior to us? That wouldn't even make sense. If you look at the physical parallel here on earth, it just can't make sense. Throughout this booklet, by the way, Mr. Armstrong passionately defends what he calls my God. When we truly dig into this life-changing subject, we are overwhelmed by the infinite wisdom and creative powers of our great God. It is great cause for passion. There is one clear sign that we are inferior to our Creator. Again, we're answering the question of, is the Creator smarter than us, or is he just a dumb force? Well, God is superior to us, and that is evidenced by the fact that we cannot create matter. We can turn dirt, stone, wood, and metal into a house, but we cannot create that dirt, stone, wood, or metal. We are confined to using the materials already in existence, materials that God made. Mr. Armstrong asks us on page 8 to consider the daunting task of designing and creating the universe. As he points out, no dummy could accomplish this. Here's a quote from that page 8. The first great cause who created matter, then, stands revealed as the supreme intelligence and architect of the universe. Mankind likes to think of itself as intelligent and sophisticated, but we are nothing compared to God. What God made perfect, we have destroyed. The earth is scarred from the abusive activities of mankind. Lakes, rivers, and even the air are poisoned by pollution. Overworking the land has led to beautiful environments turning into desert. The landscape in many areas of the globe is pockmarked by the damaging effects of war. Even the food we eat has been deconstructed, altered, and stripped of nutrients. And as Mr. Armstrong says, how smart are we really if that is how we are dealing with this earth? To conclude the booklet, Mr. Armstrong offers an analogy that completely devastates the evolutionary hypothesis. He asks, does a watch make itself? It's a good question. Does a watch rise from the ground in its separate components and assemble itself into a functioning watch? Now, that seems absurd to even have to ask. We all know that there had to be a watchmaker. There had to be people who dug up those elements from the ground, formed and fashioned and refined them, and then put them together and used them to make a watch. There's no other way around that. On page 12 of the booklet, Mr. Armstrong writes, the presence of that watch is rational and positive proof of the existence of a watchmaker or watchmakers who thought it all out, planned it, formed it, shaped it, put it together, and started it running. And then, under the subheading Master Clock of the Universe, he continues, but then you, Mr. Skeptic. So here is the final blow to every evolutionist who might read this booklet. And notice, I quoted one scripture earlier, but this entire proof has actually been in the arena of the evolutionists. He doesn't go to quoting the Bible the entire time because evolutionists don't believe in the Bible. He uses the God of the evolutionist, which is science, to prove the point. So Mr. Armstrong says, but then you, Mr. Skeptic, you look up into the great vast sky at the master clock of the universe, which never misses a second, the perfect watch by which we must constantly set all our imperfect man-made watches, and you tell me, And here he is paraphrasing the typical evolutionist argument, apparently, that all just happened. There was no great watchmaker. No mastermind thought out and planned that vast universe, brought it into being, set each star and planet in its own exact place, and started the myriad heavenly bodies coursing through space, each in its prescribed orbit, in its orderly precision. No, it just fashioned itself, put itself together, wound itself up, and started itself running. There was no intelligence, no planning, no creation, no God. Now, that is an incredible conclusion for evolutionists to reach. Whenever they have spent years studying this subject, studying how the universe came into existence, and this is what they come up with, this is what the most brilliant minds in the world, apart from God, can come up with. No one with an open mind could read Herbert W. Armstrong's booklet, Does God Exist?, and still hold on to a blind faith in evolution. That raises two disturbing possibilities, as Mr. Armstrong concluded. Either weak rational processes or willful lying. Essentially, believers in evolution are either ignorant or they are liars. So that is disturbing, and that is obviously something that shows people who are not open-minded. They do not want to actually find the truth. In a lot of cases, people who are evolutionists happen to also make a lot of money by pushing this hypothesis. A lot of them happen to be incredibly lawless in their own personal lives because they don't believe in anyone over them who could make any laws that they have to obey. So you see the effects of this type of mindset in the lives of the people who believe it. We have started this Trumpet Bookshelf series at the fork in the road between the two theories of origins, God and evolution. By dismantling evolution, we have selected the right premise, the proper eyeglass through which to view all knowledge. There is a creator, no doubt about it. At this point, more questions will come to the mind of an earnest truth seeker. Who is this God? What is his character? What is his plan for human beings whom he created? Is there a particular set of beliefs and principles that he holds dear? If so, where might we find them? And should we obey them? That word obey has become a dirty word in society. But should we obey? Is there a being out there who is superior to us? Yes, we prove that. Now, what does he expect from us? Please listen in next week when we will cover Herbert W. Armstrong's booklet, The Proof of the Bible. You can download a digital copy right now from the literature tab at thetrumpet.com, or you can even order a physical copy from there. I'm Grant Turgeon, and this has been Trumpet Bookshelf.
You've been listening to Trumpet Bookshelf. Please email your thoughts to comments at kpcg.fm. Listen for new episodes every Friday at 10 a.m. Central Time.